What's up, folks? This is Tony Brewer. You're listening to, or watching as the case may be, Cogitations. Cogitations is the podcast where we think about things, we contemplate them, we turn them over in our minds, and then we discuss them. Daniel chapter 7, verse 28, Daniel writes, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me. My countenance changed in me. But I kept the matter in my heart." Now, we're not going to keep the matter in our heart. We're going to talk about it. Today, we're going to talk about enduring hardship, how to build faith and resilience through life's trials, how to endure life's trials. And I think there's one keystone, critical piece of information or piece of advice that we can kind of assimilate here today and take it back to our own lives. And this will help us, and it will help the people around us. And one, we need to suck it up. We need to walk it off. We need to adopt the mantra of all sickness ain't death. Folks, we have tried our best, for it seems to me, for the last three or four generations, to nerf the world. And I think what we have done, and I think this shows by the uptick in women on SSRIs, you taking antipsychotics, taking antidepressants, children on ADHD medicine, children in therapy, all kinds of stuff. It even I think informs a little bit as to why the divorce rate is so high. It's because we have this sense of oughtness, and we deal more with should and should not instead of is and is not. It should be the case that we live our lives relatively absent of pain and suffering that is not our fault. But sometimes pain and suffering that is not our fault is going to come our way. So what do you do with that? Do you pathologize the human condition? Well, I'm in a crowd of people that it makes me anxious when I'm in a strange place and with a bunch of strange people. Yeah, you're right. It does. That's normal. You don't have to go to the therapist and then the psych. Well, I can't remember now if a psychologist. My wife would kill me. Anyway, go to a doctor, a psychologist or psychiatrist, and get prescribed anti-anxiety medicine. What you do is you keep exposing yourself to this particular thing that makes you uncomfortable, and you will eventually be able to manage. You may not ever stop being uncomfortable, but sometimes you just got to do the thing that's uncomfortable. You have to do the hard thing. I can't remember what famous philosopher in the past it was that said this. Between choosing what is easy and what is right, always choose what is right. And I think what has happened here is we have prioritized so much in this society for the last maybe 3 to 5 generations. No, life should be easy. Life shouldn't be this hard. And you know what? You're right. It shouldn't. I hear young couples, young people who are just starting their life to be married, and they're just like, it just shouldn't be this hard. I'm like, you're right. It shouldn't. But suck it up. Walk it off. It's too far from your heart to kill you. All sickness ain't death. All of these are idioms that, quite frankly, extol the virtue of resilience. And we're going to look at this principle of resilience in the Bible. Good morning and good to see everyone. Diana Harden, happy April Fool's Day. Glad you didn't play a joke on us today and not do a podcast. Well, let me tell you something. Although I did for a little bit think about doing a rerun episode for today, but not so. We're not going to do that. Anyway, although Aaron Dotson is not going to be with me tomorrow. He's going to be attending the Memphis School of Preaching lectureships, and so we'll we'll miss him tomorrow. And quite frankly, I wouldn't know who I could have on to guest, but on short notice anyway. I've got a handful of people that I would invite to guest, but it's my fault. Aaron's defense, he told me probably a month or so ago that he wasn't going to be here on Tuesday for the lectureship week, but I forgot. Anyway, Rob Leedy says, I didn't get a chance to watch last Friday's Cogitation episode because I was traveling for a family funeral. Lord willing, I'll watch it this evening. Rob, that's awesome. I hate that you were having to travel for that family funeral. I pray that, as odd as this is going to sound, I pray that that was one of the, I pray that that wasn't too bad of a deal. I pray that your relative is safe in the arms of Jesus. I'm going to back off because I just got real stinking awkward, didn't I? Anyway. Terry Crooks, good morning. The Sword and Pearl, hello, Sword and Pearl. And then Scott Beck, good morning to all. All right. And Rob Leedy, about the identity of the Antichrist and the man of sin, I covered and I taught what I thought it was. I've got to figure out a better way to read the chapter in from Gobel Music. I was sent a chapter on Gobel Music's, from Gobel Music's lecture about the identity of the man of sin, the son of perdition, the Antichrist. And I was only able to get the conclusion. And I think that his, what he believes is that the Antichrist, or again, Antichrist, an Antichrist is the same as a person who is a son of perdition or a man of sin. And he kind of combined those into one entity. I thought he had an interesting take on it, but if that is his take, I had to surmise it from the conclusion. Anyway, that's all I got to say about that. I'm excited. I'm glad. I hope you get to watch it. There's a paper that BJ Clark wrote about his position. I've got a copy of it somewhere. And I looked for it and looked for it and tried to find it in preparation for the show, tried to find it to share with somebody. I can't find it anywhere. But anyway, so back to the podcast. Enduring hardships, building resilience, do the hard thing. Look, as you know, I'm overweight. The reason I'm overweight is because physically for the last several years, I've been doing the easy thing. And most people, when they look at me, it's hard to reconcile the person I was before I started doing this. The person I was before I started doing this, I was very physically fit, very physically active. And I was physically fit by default. I didn't have any knowledge or anything of physical fitness. I mean, I know calories in, calories out, and all that good stuff, but that's about it. I just worked hard. And, you know, training horses after 2012, 2013, I was a member of management for a retail sales organization. And so you can imagine, you know, getting 30,000 steps in a day, all that good stuff. And when I went to Memphis School of Preaching, which is a seminary school, whenever we got to Memphis, well, every day was a special occasion for us. And so we tried to eat the city of Memphis, and working 6 hours a day in class and then coming home and sitting at the desk and studying as much as you've got to study in order to do well in that situation. I wasn't doing any physical exercise, but I was still eating just like I was eating before I began that school. I ballooned. I gained 100 pounds in a year, and it's because I stopped doing the hard thing physically. Now, I was working very hard with my, very diligently, laboriously working with my mind, but not with my body. So I ballooned up. I gained 100 pounds in a year. And before I got a hold of it where I could plateau, I mean, I just went higher and higher. And I got up to about 460 pounds. So, yeah, that was, again, I've just got that kind of body. I've got that kind of metabolism to be able to do that. Well, you've got to go do the hard thing. If I want to lose weight, I've got to stress my body out a little bit. The more weight you lose, the quicker you lose it, the more stress you have to do to your body. The bigger a calorie deficit you have to be in. You have to go to the gym. You have to pick up heavy things and set them down gently. It's just what you've got to do, and you're going to be sore. You're going to be tired. But the more you do it, the more you'll do it. I know this logically. So for the folks in this world today that seemingly are paralyzed and because they're too scared to act because of the hard thing might get them, I have a certain amount of compassion on them because, quite frankly, they have been lied to. Rob Leedy, the lecture was from the first annual Fort Worth Lectures. The lectureship book is titled Premillennialism, True or False. It was edited by Wendell Winkler. I do not know if the book is still available anywhere online or not. Wait a second. The first... No, never mind. I think I've got a series of lectureship books from the Church Lectures. I don't think I have a series of lectureship books from the Fort Worth Lectures. I'll have to look into that. But anyway, so my point is I've got a certain amount of compassion for, you know, let's say somebody that has high anxiety that maybe can't go out into public very often. So I've got some compassion. I'm not discompassionate. I'm not jaded towards people. I'm not like, well, y'all are just bad people or this, that, and the other. I get it. But we have to figure out a way to start collectively toughening society up. So let's talk about this. First off, probably, and let's go to Hebrews chapter 12. This is probably the golden text for this. Hey, look, you're going to have to suck it up and keep doing what you're doing. You've got to remain faithful. If you're married, if you're a husband married to a wife, you've got to be a husband. You've got to be a father. If you're a wife, if you're a woman married to a man, you got to be a wife. You have to perform wifely duties, all this, that, and the other. You got to be a mother to your children, father to your... The idea is life goes on. Well, in Hebrews chapter 12, I'm going to start reading this. Now, keep in mind, Hebrews chapter 11 is faith's hall of fame. And I guess I'm going to start reading in verse 36 of Hebrews chapter 11, because I think it sets the tone. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder. They were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth, and all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. So he's saying, look at what all these people suffered. Forget all the people for a moment that we called by name. Look at all the people that suffered that we didn't call by name. Look at what they endured. You haven't suffered like this. You need to remain faithful in the face of trials, in the face of persecutions. How can you do it? Well, verse 12, wherefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such a great contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Suck it up. You have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. and ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then ye are bastards and not sons. You understand this because we know how our father treats us. A little bit of hardship makes you much better in the long run. A little bit of paddle to your backside makes you, a little bit of trauma to your behind keeps you from having trauma in the head later on. Folks, we've got to stop trying to nerf the world. The Hebrews writer is telling these Christians, look, you're suffering right now. You can handle this. You're going to be better off for it. What about the struggles and trials that you folks in the listening audience are dealing with? You know, we had a very sincere prayer prayed by a man in the congregation yesterday. Every last Sunday of the month, in lieu of class, we have a fellowship meal and singing. So we have a worship service. We have a period of fellowship, and then we sing for about an hour and a half, depending on how folks' voices hold up. But the idea is, if you're a Christian male that's present, you can get up and lead a song, you can read a passage of Scripture, or you can pray, or any combination of two of those. And this gentleman decided to lead a song and pray, and he prayed a very, very earnest prayer. And he talked about how difficult it was for being a Christian here in Western culture. And I thought, I mean, that just hit me because I know secondhand the culture from whence he came, quote unquote, back home. And Christians are like actually it would be normal for a Christian to actually be persecuted back home. For that gentleman. But yet he talked about how difficult it was here. And that made me think, you know, everybody's got trials and tribulations. It's just they're different in different locales. Maybe quote unquote back home, he had to be careful. He could have violence perpetuated against him and his family. But here, maybe it's stuff that would be harder to resist because it's not violence. It's not people trying to kill you. It's not people trying to harm you or imprison you physically, but maybe it's the temptation of money, success, maybe this easy easier in comparison lifestyle. It's more difficult to remain faithful. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if I've ever shared this publicly, but I'm going to share it publicly. I'm going to share it now, and I'm hoping I can articulate it correctly. When I went into kindergarten, whenever I was 4 years old. Now I turned 5 in October, but that made me a very young student in comparison to my contemporaries. On top of that, because of early childhood trauma, I was emotionally stunted, and I was probably, by the time I graduated high school, I was 17, but I was probably more along the lines of an 8 or 9 year old when it come to emotional maturity and emotional intelligence. So I had some issues. Well, I went to Freed Hardeman University in 1995 in August. As a 17-year-old boy, and that end of that first year, I was 18, And that was the spring of 1996. So I had two semesters. Now, it was a debacle. I mean, like, I was a worthless piece of trash, okay? Like, it was waste of money, waste of people's time. I was a mess. And, Sword and Pearl. I definitely want to touch on that. So everything that I did that was bad was my fault. I'm not saying, well, it's because of this, and that's why. No, it's mine. I own it. But I would like to share with you some struggles that I had as a not quite mature enough 17-year-old boy. I went to Freed Hardeman University expecting this great bastion of Christendom. Everybody's there is going to be good Christians and faithful. And it, quite frankly, what it wasn't perfect. Are you surprised? I mean, don't leave the chat saying, well, Tony's bashing Freed Hardeman. No, I'm not bashing Freed Hardeman. It wasn't perfect. And because it was less than perfect, it kind of threw me off a little bit. And then everybody was a Christian, but yet I didn't, there were just some hard things for me to reconcile. And so I just went absolutely nuts. It was just a different kind of environment. And it was harder for me to be faithful there than it was for me to be faithful in an environment that was openly antagonistic to Christendom. And so I went nuts. I fell away. I apostatized. Now, I came back, obviously, and I'm glad I did. And I hate that part of my story is years of apostasy, but it is what it is. I will also tell you this, my first quarter, so the Memphis School of Preaching is 4 years of schooling crammed into 2 years. And my first year of Memphis School of Preaching, which, you know, we had children, I was married and all that good stuff, and I was pretty settled in the Lord, but I found after the first quarter, I'm getting farther from God, but I'm studying the Bible more than I ever have in my life. It's not the school's fault, it's my fault. What I did is I made sure that instead of studying the Bible for purely academic purposes, which is what the school requires of you, you've got to study in order to learn and pass the test and whatnot. I set aside some time each day to study the Bible for the purpose of getting close to God, and that rectified that situation. But can you see how the persecution, the hardships, the trials, don't have to be the same for every situation and every person, but the remedy is you have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. The remedy is this isn't going to kill you. The remedy is there's no reason for you to lose faith. All God's children got problems. There's no temptation overtaking you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will with the temptation make a way of escape. Scott, I want to get that Scott Beck. Hello, Connie Barden. Where is that Scott Beck comment? Oh, yeah, it's not the recommended method, but chronic disease can build endurance and resilience. It absolutely can. Absolutely. Terry Crooks, I hope I said hello to you. If I didn't, I should have. Hello, Connie Barden. Sue Ross. All right. Oh, right here. I'm not sure I could endure even half of what Paul went through in 2 Corinthians 11. Absolutely correct. I'm telling you. And incidentally, there's this, I call it an iceberg statement, Scott. Let me go to Philippians. Listen to this. Philippians, I'm going to start reading chapter 1, verse 7. Even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense of the God of the and confirmation of the gospel, ye are all partakers of my grace. For God is my record, how greatly I long after you in the bowels of Jesus Christ. And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness that are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God. But I would you should understand, brethren. So now he's saying, look, I need you to understand something. The things which happened unto me have fallen out rather to the furtherance of the gospel. The things that happened unto me. Do you understand that the things that happened unto Paul would happen unto me? For about 6 months, y'all probably all y'all would hear is me complaining about the things that happened to me. Does that make you think less of me? I hope not. I'm telling you, man. I'd be like, Scott Beck, can you believe they hit me with a whip? And here I was. I mean, it's just human nature to complain about our trials and tribulations. And and incidentally, when you read that text, Scott, the thing that blows my mind is the very last. And besides all this, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches, beside these things that are without, the things that happen in the body, the things that happen in his mind, it was his mind that was troubling him, I think, more than anything. All right. So, thank you for that comment, Scott. And incidentally, Connie, I don't know if I'm on top of my game today or not. I think I've said hi to Connie Barden two times or three. Okay, Tony, and this is the reason we're covering this, chat, is because this is right in alignment with this idea of how to build faith and resilience, how to endure life's trials. Tony, what are your thoughts on quote-unquote gentle parenting? I think it can do more harm than good. Parents want to be liked by their kids, to their kids' detriment. Yes. Definition of terms is very important here. I do not know all of the nuance associated with the term gentle parenting. My understanding of it is there's probably some good attributes to it, but I think with my limited understanding of it, I think what happens is people don't apply it across the board, and they take a few things from it and they focus on those things. So it comes off as, I just let my kids get away with anything and there's no discipline ever. And I think that's a reaction to an extreme authoritarian type parenting, which I am not an extreme authoritarian type parenter. My deal is I don't want to create codependent children either. It's really sad to say, I kind of want my children not to need me. You know, my son is, he'll be 21 in a month. My daughter's 20 this year. And quite frankly, both of them could handle things on their own quite nicely. I mean, they just don't need us. We're up here in Canada together as a family, and we're working together, which is kind of odd. It's typically more of an Eastern mindset that you kind of stay together and stay close knit like that. But it's the Western mindset is we get the young people reared up and get them, and the young people move across the country. If you've got a family with five or six children, they all scatter and they don't pull their resources and all that. When it's a very Eastern tradition, it's a very Eastern value where you might have, let's say you have a mother and father, and you have six or seven children. You have the four brothers, two or three daughters. The four brothers will all get a house together. They'll all pool their money. And that way you've got the women taking care of the home stuff, the brothers going out and earning money, all these families live together, and quite frankly, it works good for them. But anyway, my point is this. My children are not codependent, and they could just, If we winked out of existence tomorrow, except for the grieving process, they'd absolutely be fine. Some folks think because I am stern and that because when I draw lines, I'm very unyielding, I think they come up with the idea that I hit my children a lot. Very, 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 very rarely did I ever hit my children. That's where a lot of people make a mistake. Discipline is teaching something. A strike is typically punitive. So you've got to figure in that exchange, are we being more punitive, or are we trying to reform and correct and bring back into alignment with the core value of what the family believes? Sometimes a spanking is needed, and it depends on what you mean by that. Because here's typically what happens. I'll give you a scenario. You'll have a mother with a couple of children on a pew, and she's got a ruler or a wooden spoon. And if the children do anything that they're not supposed to do, she'll hit those children and that's, I don't agree with that whatsoever. It's very lazy. There are ways to get children to obey without striking them. And that brings the debate, well, what about spanking? And people throw around verses in Proverbs and stuff like that. Look, it is not a sin to practice the capital punishment of the home, which is physical discipline. Physical punishment, we'll say. I don't even know if you'd call it discipline. By the time you get to where you're with me and I'm going to spank you, the discipline part of that journey is over. We're in the punishment part. In other words, we've exhausted the avenues. I have stopped you for your own good. I've explained adequately the expectations, and you understand the expectations, and you still fall short of those expectations. Well, the discipline part of your journey is over. You've entered into the punishment part. I'll give you a good example. We were on our way to visit some family for Thanksgiving, and the Blurple Plymouth van that we had at the time, that incidentally somebody actually gave us, had a DVD hanging on the back of each seat, a screen. And my son, at the tender age of, I don't know, 6 or 7, he was messing with that seat with his feet. And I was telling him, look, you're going to tear that DVD screen. You're going to break it. And if you break it, well, there's going to have to be a punishment. So you're going to have to stop. Now, we had another family member in, and it was not prudent for me to handle that in that situation, but he was old enough to understand that he needed to quit doing that. And he kept doing it, and the screen broke. And whenever I figured that out, I calmly told him, look, so we had about another hour to travel, then we were going to eat, then we're going to travel another 2 hours to another Thanksgiving that was that evening. And so we weren't going to be home till about 10:30 that night. And I explained to him, you're going to have to be spanked whenever we get home. And that's going to be a part of your punishment. You're going to be thinking about that all evening. Of course, he didn't like it. And I mean, I don't blame him. Well, that evening, whenever we get home, we walk in the door, we set our stuff down. I look at him. I said, are you ready? He said, yes, sir. And we walked back to the bedroom and we talked about it. He was able to explain the situation, and he knew why he was getting spanked. And so I held out my arm and I had him lean over my arm, and with my hand, I took his hand, or I took my hand and I hit him on his behind three or four times, and I hit him pretty squarely, and he stood up. He was crying and everything. I let him live with that for a minute. Then I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, "Listen, I'm going to let you cry this out. This is the rules. You know the rules. After you've received a punishment for something, we never, ever talk about it again." And that's the way it went in my house. And I maybe had that kind of reaction with him two other times. I think it only happened with my daughter once. But I had to take it upon myself to be way more involved if that was going to be my position. So I do not believe in hitting children in order to get them to comply. There is never a reason for that. If you have to hit your child to get them to comply, then you have failed, and you need to reassess your interaction with them and how much influence you have over them. And that's, I will die on that hill. Okie Cammy, comment was too long. The rod is what the shepherd uses to bring the erring lamb back into alignment, not strike it. Absolutely. In fact, the that rod, that hooked rod, they could actually take and scoop that lamb up with that rod, and they could carry that. They could prop that rod on their shoulder, and that lamb being carried in the crook of that rod. And of course, it was for discipline. It was to bring them back in alignment. Now look. Don't leave this live stream and say, "Well, Tony doesn't believe you should discipline your children. Tony's against spanking. Tony's..." No, I believe in organized discipline that carries with it the threat of the capital punishment of the household. Now, before I get any more comments, which I want to get to, let me explain that. There are three God-given institutions, all three of which have acceptable discipline and capital punishment. The civil government, there are levels of discipline, and then there is levels of punishment, but then there is a capital punishment, okay? The capital punishment obviously would be execution. The church, there is levels of discipline. So there's a discipline hierarchy. If your brother trespasses against you, you go and tell them. If you realize you've trespassed against a brother, you go and say, "I've trespassed against you." You make it right. But if it escalates, it's got to climb up the hierarchy. Eventually, it gets to where it's brought before the whole church, and then the capital punishment, in other words, the top, the farthest, most severe punishment is withdrawal of fellowship. Just like in the civil government, the government's highest form of punishment, the capital, is execution. The highest form of government of punishment for the church is withdrawal of fellowship. But there are ways to get to that, avenues to get to that. You don't start there. Just like the government doesn't start with execution, the church doesn't start with withdrawal of fellowship. Now, in the home, which is a God-given institution, what would the capital punishment of the home be for a child? Physical discipline. So that would be a spanking. Capital punishment would be you don't spare that rod of authority, which can sometimes be the rod of punishment. And so you spank them, and you're well within your rights to do that with a belt or with a switch. Maybe you got a paddle made out of wood. Maybe you got a flip-flop. Maybe you use your hand. But you're well within your rights as a parent to do that. Now, my only thing that I would say to consider is think about the frequency that the other two institutions practice capital punishment. Maybe we think about that before we start hitting our children to get them to comply. I can take a horse or a dog, and I can get it to do anything I want with a billy club. But that's not a very effective way of training an animal. Well, it is effective because it gets the job done, but that's not a very tasteful way, and it doesn't produce a really good finished product. Same way with a child. If your idea of discipline is to hit that child with a stick, a hand, or another object until it complies, you're no disciplinarian. You're just an abuser at that point. I put forward this to a person one time, and they didn't have anything to say back. It just blew their mind. You can't see it, but on my desk is various and sundered pieces of sound equipment and this, that, and the other. And let's say that I had a four-year-old child here that thought it was awesome. And I said, now don't touch these knobs. Well, whenever he goes to touch the knob, I go whack, and I rap him in the head with my knuckles. Why in the world would that be acceptable? Especially if that's my child, most people would say, well, that's fine. That's your child, right? Yes. My thing is, but why? Now, what if I have an adult in here and I tell the adult, okay, we're doing the podcast, but don't touch these buttons. And he starts messing with the buttons. Why can't I hit him? I want to know. Nobody's ever given me a good answer. Now, whenever I ask this adult, now why can't I hit the adult in order to get him to obey? The person said, well, because the adult should know better and the child needs to learn. I said, that's the reason why you don't hit the child. Is because the child doesn't know any better and needs to learn. The adult actually deserves to be hit there by that logic, because the adult knows better. The adult has already received the discipline, and now because he has rebelled openly against the discipline, he deserves the punishment. Well, what would the punishment be? Well, you can't hit adults. I get it, but it's something to think about. Sword and pearl about my story with my son. The anticipation would kill me. That makes total sense, Tony. Super balanced approach. Thank you very much. Yeah, and like I said, sword and pearl. I have never in my life felt as bad for little kids. I felt bad for him that day. I do believe making him wait that long was cruel and unusual, and I'm not sure I would do it that way again. I think that I would go ahead and get that out of the way. I would still spank him, but I think I would go ahead and get that out of the way. I don't think I'd make him wait that long. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm a human being, and there's things on my life I look back, I might have handled a little different. Scott Beck says, I remember the principal's paddle with the holes in it. Thankfully, I avoided getting hit with it. Absolutely. And, you know, all of this ties into, we've got to stop nerfing the world. Because here's the thing. My son learned a valuable lesson. There are consequences for actions. And so he learned a little bit of impulse control. Now, it cost him getting whacked by his daddy, who loves him and is not going to do any long-term harm. But if he didn't learn that lesson when he was six, let's say he got out when he was 16, you can be tried as an adult at 16. He might have done something because he didn't have that impulse control that would cause him to go before the judge and be punished by somebody who did not love him. That's why that gentle parenting, if I'm understanding gentle parenting correctly, is a bunch of hogwash. It's semantically overloaded, right? I think, so let's say, Sword and Pearl, that you didn't ask the question and use the words gentle parenting. You may say, Tony, what are your thoughts about people who don't discipline their children because they think that they need to be free spirits, okay? I would say something like, well, look, you know, we have to be gentle in our parenting style. And I fully believe we need to be gentle in our parenting style. But gentle parenting, if I understand it correctly, it's a detriment and a net negative to society. Let me see. There was Rob Leedy. I also know someone who will not discipline their children because they fear someone will think they are abusing their child and they will be taken from them. That is absolutely terrible. Terrible, terrible. And it's absolutely valid. Absolutely valid. And the thing about it is, and Rob points it out right here, not disciplining them will do more harm to them than disciplining them will. Think about this. Yes, it's your job as a parent to offer consequences within the home for poor conduct so that it doesn't magnify outside of the home and their consequences are life-altering in a negative way. And hey, Alabama, train up a child in the way he should go. That absolutely means know your child. And here's another thing. You may have one of them little hard-headed hellions that grow up to be really, really good, productive members of society that setting them in time out is way more effective at discipline than spanking is. And again, remember, the older they get, the less effective physical discipline is anyway. But hey, Alabama is 100% correct. We have to know our child, which implies we've got to be involved so we can know our child. And incidentally, I think about one of the 12 rules for life that Jordan Peterson has in his book, which is leave children alone when they're skateboarding. Never bother a kid when he's skateboarding. And the idea is when children are doing things that are dangerous, make it as safe as you possibly can while allowing them to do something dangerous. In other words, let them play on the monkey bars, but let them fall off. If they're outside and they're doing something, let them be bored and let them do something stupid, but that's not going to get them killed. It's your job as a parent to figure out where that line is. I just think about some of the stuff we did as children. I walked around with a stick everywhere and it was my sword. And me and my cousin were walking down the road and I saw an empty 2-liter bottle. And I hit that empty two-liter bottle as hard as I can. And for about a second and a half, I was seeing stars and I was so mad because I thought my cousin hit me with a stick. But he was laughing. And then when it dawned on me what happened, I was laughing. That 2-liter bottle had the lid on it. And I hit it with that stick so hard that 2-liter bottle bounced my stick back and hit me right in the forehead. And we died laughing. But boy, anyway, you know, that only happened to me one time. That was a pretty cheap lesson. You have to make the punishment fit the crime for the age, but no discipline results in a child who grows up in thinking they can get away with anything, and then at the end that they should get away with it. What Connie is talking about is being entitled, and we have created a lot of entitled adults because we didn't discipline as children. And I say we collectively. It's the editorial we. We collectively. That's not what I mean. The editorial we. The decay of the family structure contributes to this as well. You know it does. You know it does. All right. I'm gonna for the next about 7 or 8 minutes, I'm gonna go back to the idea of enduring hardship. And all of this, again, when you do this with your children, you make them resilient and able to endure hardships because they're not used to getting everything they want. So when they get up into society that doesn't, I'm not trying to be black-pilled here, but look, nobody cares about you like your mama does. Nobody cares about you like your daddy does. So you're going to get out in society once you get 18, 19, 20 years old, and you're going to be at a job, and that boss don't care about you like your daddy does, so he don't care if he schedules you to work till midnight on Thursday and then schedules you to come in at 6 a.m. on Friday. You may just have to endure that for a while. And that stinketh. Where is my tip jar? There's my tip jar. Remember, if you like what we do and you want to support us, every way to do it's in the show notes, but you can do a $5 a month subscription on Substack, or you can do www.nearchurches@gmail.com. And every dime you help support us goes right back into growing the brand. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the trials that you would face today as Christians. It's a little bit different than it was in the first century. And you, whatever nation in which you live, your trials are going to be different than where I live. And my trials are different where you live. But we all face trials. And the idea is, in order to be resilient and good at facing trials, you need to go out and face trials. Okay? You gotta do it to where it's not going to kill you. Think about this. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. We need to embrace these trials and know that they're good for us. Count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience or perseverance. But let patience have a perfect work, that you may perfect and entire, wanting nothing. I wish we had more time here, but think about how trials are a catalyst for developing perseverance and achieving actualization in a particular aspect of your life. Man, I'm going to tell you, I'm at a point in my life where the hardest trials that I'll go through, they'll only make me cling tighter to God. It's kind of like that Aesop's fable where the north wind and the sun are looking at a man, and the north wind is saying, I'm more powerful than the sun, and the sun is saying, you're not more powerful than me. And the north wind says, we'll have a contest. See that man over there? I bet you I'm so powerful I can blow his coat off. And the sun says, okay, so whoever makes the man take off his coat first, or whoever causes the man to shed his coat first is the winner. They're the strongest. And so the north wind blew and blew and blew and blew. And the only thing the man did was hunker down and grab his coat tighter. Then the sun showed up. And the sun just existed. And the man got to sweating, and then he took his coat off. Well, the point of that story is multifaceted, but the idea is, as Christians, we need to face so many trials that we understand that when the trials come, and we need to understand the purpose of the trials, that it causes us to cleave tighter to God, instead of separate from God. Hey Hey Alabama says, some of the brattiest children I ever met are now good and productive people. Yeah, I can see that. And I would dare say that if those children grew up to be good and productive people, somewhere along the lines, they learned the lessons that they should have learned as children. All right. What about sharing in suffering? 1 Peter 4:12-13. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though it's some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice, inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory should be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. Folks, we all share in the fellowship of Christianity. And so we need to think about, like what the Hebrews writer said in Hebrews 12, we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Look to the people in Hebrews 11. If that's not good enough, look to Jesus. And if you need some more help, just look at the people around you. Look to your left and to your right. Somebody's going through something, and you can draw strength from that. And then I want you to think about strength and weakness. Think about 2 Corinthians 12:9-10. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I rather glory in my infirmities. That's a paradox of strength and weakness. And you can glory in the fact that you're going through suffering because of all the things we've discussed. You know, it makes you stronger. So how is it then, as we're thinking about some final thoughts, can we take the lessons we learn from Scripture and we look at society, at the people in society whom society tells, well, you should never feel sad because that's depression. If you're depressed, you need to take a pill. You should never feel anxious because if you're anxious, that's bad. You need to take a pill. You should, any kind of mental or physical discomfort you have, you need to take a pill. You need to medicate that out. You need to, folks, they're trying to dehumanize. It feels like to me. Part of the human experience is suffering and how we get through it. We're told in advance it's going to happen. And so if we embrace it, then we'll be like that person at the gym who's lifting weights and his muscles are sore, but he's growing. And that's what we want. When I was little, my older sister used to damage my parents' things. When they came home, she would tell them it was me. Although I begged and pleaded that it wasn't me, I was never believed. My dad used to send me to the corner and to tell God what I had done and ask him to help me be a better person. My mom would use the belt as punishment. It wasn't until 21 years later, when my mother and her friends were reminiscing about the past, that my mom told her friends all the troubles. Hold on. I missed it. All right. Reminiscing about the past, that my mom told her friends all the troubles I had caused her. I attempted to defend myself again, but my sister responded and said, "It wasn't Terry, it was me. I just told you it was her." The look on my mom's face was priceless. Yeah, very, very rarely does the scapegoat child get that kind of vindication. Yeah, I'm glad that you were able to experience at least that one cathartic moment. And Connie Barden, keeping the drug companies in business. You got that right, sister. And again, don't leave the podcast saying that Tony don't believe in mental illness. Tony does, and Tony thinks that if the doctor prescribes you something and it's really something that you need, maybe listen to your doctor, okay? Just a thought there. Yeah, Deborah O'Neill says she got a lot of spankings because of being blamed for someone else's shenanigans. Absolutely. Oh, man, that's one of the worst things in the world. And because it makes you feel crazy, it's a form of gaslighting. It's like, no, I'm not crazy. I didn't do this. Well, no, we know you did. Why? Because she said you did, but she lying to you. No, we think you're lying. Usually, oh, man, yeah, I got to hush up about that. Okay, folks. I hope that I have said something today to encourage you. I appreciate Sword and Pearl's question about the gentle parenting so much. That term gentle parenting is semantically overloaded. I don't co-sign to this concept of gentle parenting as I think it's presented, but I do think we need to be gentle as parents. I mean, think about how God is with us. Well, this passage of Scripture come to mind. Paul talked about how he was with the church in Thessalonica. He was like a father, and he was gentle as a mother nursing her children. Folks, God with us, he's very gentle. He's very kind, but he also has boundaries. And we can't cross those boundaries, because once we cross those boundaries, then we are in the realm of being disciplined. We are in the realm of being punished. And then when it comes to building resilience and how to endure life's trials, do this. If there is something you are afraid of, make small steps on working on it every day. Let's say that you have a deathly fear of the refrigerator. It's kind of like a refrigerator that goes up in an elevator. If you have, let's say, a phobia of the elevator, get a trusted friend and walk into a building that has an elevator, if that's all you can do. Stay there for 5 minutes looking at the elevator, and then leave. Then come back the next day and walk up to the elevator. If you keep making incremental steps, eventually you'll be going up and down the elevator. We have to expose ourselves to hard stuff so we can endure hard stuff. All right? Folks, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much, Scott Beck. God bless every one of you. Remember, like, subscribe, and share. Cogitations, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn Radios, where you can get the audio archives of this. Free subscription at Substack for all our articles. Send us a Patreon at nearchurches@gmail.com or go to www.patreon.com/Christianity Now. Give them your information. They'll take $1 a month out of your whatever information you give them, and you can set it and forget it. And it's really, really a good thing. Is that the verse I was looking for? Proverbs 13. Oh, we got enough time to look at this verse. Proverbs 13:34. No, 24. Yeah, he that spareth his rod loveth his, or hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Yes, and I just want to say that verse doesn't necessitate hitting your child with a stick. It involves it, but it's not like don't use that as a proof text to say, well, I can hit my child with a belt, flip flop my hand or whatever because of Proverbs 13:24. I think it has a deeper, more nuanced meaning to that. But that's all I've got. God bless every one of you. And yeah, subscribe, like, share, all that good stuff. Remember, we're just about monetized. So watch the content, share the content, subscribe. And folks, we'll catch you on the flip side.